Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This is an Empowerment Hour. Today, health and healing, both mental, physical, and spiritual. No guest, no investigative reporting. That'll be tomorrow. Today, I'm going to talk about how we can safely lower our cholesterol, the latest against statin drugs, and that'll be from Dr. Robert Haas. And then talking about the Japanese seaweed that has an ability to really function to help us with cancer and other conditions by Tisha Johnson from Life Extension. I'm going to be sharing information about homemade remedies to treat hay fever and seasonal allergies, because a lot of people are having allergies right now, so I thought it would be a good time to do this. And also, what does music do exactly when we are trying to recuperate? And a new report shows that a simple herb can reduce tumors by 56% in this study. Whole lot of healing going on, and all of my studies are from the peer-reviewed mainstream literature. We spend a lot of time each day looking at the world literature and asking ourselves what's not in the mainstream, because often what's in the mainstream has been filtered or has been written or slanted by public relations firms. We want the hard science, and that's what you're getting. Let's begin. Homemade remedies, things you can do for yourself to stop the itching and congestion and coughing and runny nose that are so common. And why? Because one of the ways the body is able to rid things out is through mucus, and that's why our noses run or we cough up. Even on a cold day, if you're in excellent health, you're still going to have a runny nose because the cold outside is drying the mucous membranes. And so the mucus secretes in order not to have enough bacterial overgrowth. So when you look at the coming of seasons, especially spring and summer, you're having grasses and plant pollens, and those can cause inflammatory reactions. That in turn will help turn on the immune system in a way you don't want. And then if you, let's say, around chemicals, you're not aware of it. For example, a lot of people who take their clothes to dry cleaners are not aware of DEET and other very toxic chemicals to use in the dry cleaning process instead of getting them done through an organic dry cleaner. And there are those. I use one myself in New York. There are several just on Broadway in the 80s. Or let's say that you have some cheaply made furniture. Almost always that's going to be made with particle board, meaning they take particles of wood, compress them together, and they hold that wood together with a very toxic glue. But it outgasses for up to a year to 2 years. Same with carpets. Or they'll make a carpet naturally out of wool, let's say from India or from Pakistan, but then they treat it with formaldehyde embalming fluid to keep it from being infested and eaten by moths. But you're not told that there's formaldehyde, and that's very toxic to the eyes. So needless to say, we live in a very polluted environment unless you make an effort to get a home air filtration system and just pay attention to what you buy. So then what can we do? Well, there's a lot we can do using just natural antihistamines. The natural antihistamines are going to turn off the histamine levels, and that can help you. Here are my list of the things you can do to help yourself with allergies. Make a simple tea of chamomile. It has a lot of benefit if you have hay fever. And also use just a drop of lemon oil. And you can even inhale it. You can put lemon oil into hot water and inhale that. And that will break up sinus congestion, allow real profuse drainage of the sinus cavities. Ginger. Ginger is great as a tea with some good tupelo or orange blossom honey. That'll help decongest you and allow you to cough up the phlegm. Remember, any phlegm that you're coughing up, better that it's out of the body than you swallow it down. That's one reason in the morning, upon arising, that you should always wash your mouth with mouthwash and then clean your tongue. before you eat or drink anything. Why? Because overnight, depending upon how good your hygiene is, you will have oils in your tongue. Now, the tongue does not have the same tissue that the lips and the digestive tract have, which are very smooth mucous membranes. The tongue has millions and millions of little cells that hold pheromones or any form of smell is held in the tongue. That's why you actually smell when you breathe. If you were to take any food or any fragrance and hold your nose, eat it, or try to breathe in, you won't smell anything, because it's the air that is inhaled coming across the tongue, and it's like wind through a wheat field, and that's where you get your smell. Well, that's fine when you're enjoying the food, but it's not fine in the morning when bacteria have built up, lots of bacteria, because people don't think about cleaning their tongue. They clean their teeth, not their tongue. To clean your tongue properly, you should mouthwash, and then gently from the back forward, take a tongue scraper and scrape off the mucus. You should do it 3 or 4 times till your tongue is pink, and also your breath is sweet. Now, most people wake up and they have morning breath, very bad breath. Now, if they're smokers, you drink coffee or alcohol, really bad breath. But if you keep yourself clean and you practice proper hygiene, you won't have that. But if you didn't do what I'm suggesting, and you go to drink something or eat something, the bacteria goes right into your system. You're swallowing it down. Also, we can use green tea. Now, green tea at about 400 milligrams blocks the production of histamine. So that's terrific for your immune system. And also peppermint tea. That'll get your sinuses draining also. Butterbur. That reduces inflammation, blocks histamines and leukotrienes. It's real good. So, and then you can have grapefruit and lemon in a cup of water. And I generally take the grapefruit, juice it, lemon, juice it, blend the two together, and then use some raw honey. And the omega-3 fatty acids also block inflammatory chemicals produced in the blood. And for numerous homeopathic medicines that are excellent, you could use Wythia, W-Y-E-T-H-I-A. It's similar to Arundo, R-U-N-D-O, especially if you have itching around the mouth and the nose, and it'll help that. So simple things can make a difference. According to Science Daily, an interesting article published in the Journal of Cardiothoracic Surgery demonstrates that music can reduce rejection of heart transplants, at least in this laboratory study, by influencing the immune system. Now, the link between the immune system and brain function, we've known for a long time. In fact, this goes back to 1982. I was doing a study on stressors. And what I did was I had a group of rats that were being used in the main laboratory, the Institute of Biology, about 5,000 rats. And I had 1,000 that I was using up in my area on the third floor. And I asked them to do a series of measurements. The people come in each day who do these, and who feed the rats and water the rats and clean their cages. I said, pay attention to see if any of them are gaining weight, if they're stressed, if they've reverted to cannibalism, which is very common. And over a 3-month period, every day throughout the day, except for night, I played very soothing, soft classical music. And then I played flute music. We had such de-stressing. There was not a single case of obesity, no biting of the tails, none of the behavior that happens when rats are stressed. Downstairs, however, where they didn't play the music, they had the normal type of aggressive behavior and anxiety behavior, tail biting, ear biting, and cannibalism. Now we know through psychoneuroimmunology that soothing music is very important for our immune system. And music is used clinically to reduce anxiety after heart attack and to reduce pain and nausea during bone marrow transplants. And there's absolute evidence that music can act via the parasympathetic nervous system, which regulates the body functions that have no conscious control over, including digestion. That's why I believe that the way we eat today is so counterintuitive. I can remember when we ate, we had to eat together. There was no rushing. There was no telephone that would be answered, no television on. And my mother insisted that what we talk about is something joyful. Anything that was a problem would be talked about after meal, not during the dinner itself. So we took our time. And when we were finished, we asked for permission to leave the table. Those were some remarkable moments because you're in such close contact with your family. You're enjoying food together. And in the case of my mother, she was very conscious about the food that she cooked, at least given her background. Her own great aunt was a much better cook and was vegan. But that aside, now look at how people eat. They're almost always multitasking, even when eating. They're talking, listening, watching news, twittering, on the phone. Each time you divide your energy, you reduce its power. Therefore, when I run, I don't talk. And I've taught thousands, tens of thousands of athletes race walking and running in the park. And one of the things we do is share the energy, but not the conversation. Because if you're focused on your breathing and your body movement and the rhythm that you're all in one stride, that takes synchronicity. And then you're in this zone. And when a bunch of you get in the zone together, it's just terrific. So what if everybody was talking? Then you wouldn't be focused on your breathing or how high up your legs were coming and how far down and how much pressure per square inch, which causes knee injury and ankle injuries and pulled muscles. So we don't end up having those problems. Now that same idea is true also when you're eating a meal. Focus upon the beauty of the food, the color. And good food prepared properly should break down in the mouth so that the next bite also initiates a whole new pleasant response. And that's when you've prepared the food, you've presented the food, and you season the food in a way that excites the flavors. If you're going to have something salty, then have something that is not. Something warm has something cool. You're balancing energies. And everything in life is an exchange of energy. Everything. When I do a lecture, and I recently... It was interesting because I'm on the road filming now, and you'll see the results this summer. But when I return from this trip, I'll be premiering 2 new films in New York and 3 in Los Angeles. And that you haven't seen, don't even know a thing about yet. I've kept them under wraps. They're in post-production now. And then what I'm filming now, you'll see in late summer and fall. I have a whole lot of films coming out because I think this is the time more and more people are open for new ideas and want tools, and the films act as tools. In any case, I'm filming a person who's a senior citizen, and it's a man talking about what it's like when you have no family, and he was an engineer, and most of the senior citizens I'm filming, no matter where it's at in America, they tend to be more conservative financially. They came from that background of understanding what happens when you don't have money or that you spend it foolishly. But one story, a man didn't spend beyond his means and had no mortgage on his house and then had discussions with friends of his whose children were going off to school. He suggested that his kids go to a public university and that they work before they go in order to get the money, and therefore they can be responsible for themselves. He was made to feel, in his words, guilty, shameful. I was made to feel that somehow I was a selfish parent, that my children have a highly competitive world, that school's different today than when we went to school, he said, and as a result, I should do anything necessary to make sure that my kids don't suffer. And he said he didn't see that it was suffering. He says his kids and no kids he knows have ever suffered. The last generation to actually suffer were his parents in the Great Depression and the Second World War. They suffered. Kids today are spoiled rotten. They're selfish. They're narcissistic. They don't give a damn about anyone but themselves. And as you've heard me say many times, none of the movements they're engaged in now are going to actually lead to anything constructive for a simple reason. They're so into themselves that if they show up, they think that's the event. No, sorry, it's not. And if we took that kind of mindless narcissism and you applied it to the civil rights movement, we'd still have slavery. And applied it to the women's movement, there'd still be gross misogynist discrimination. If you're not going to allow any adults into the room, then don't be surprised when you don't get the results that you anticipate. In any case, this man said, okay. So he mortgaged his house. And then it was no longer enough for, because of peer pressure, his kids had to go to private schools, and two of the kids went to Ivy League schools. And they did all right in school, and he was happy for them. And then his company was purchased. He had worked there for over 25 years. And this was just 6 years ago. And lo and behold, for 6 months, he was teaching a person from India his job. And he kept saying, why am I teaching this person all about it? And they kept giving him the idea that, oh, there were more people going to be hired. Not true. And this is now known that 8.4 million people have been hired who have advanced degrees and advanced knowledge from India and other countries, but principally India, to take the place of highly educated, advanced degrees and advanced knowledge workers in the United States. We're talking about people who are engineers and architects and people who have understood the nuts and bolts and have how everything works in a given corporation, but they also have built up time and seniority. And now out they go, and who takes their place? Someone willing to work at one half the wages without all the benefits. So anyhow, he lost his job. Trouble is, he had trouble getting another job. Nobody was interested in talking with him because of his age. And then the crash came. He lost 80% of his 401k, he said, and he didn't get a pension, and he had his mortgage. And it was a big mortgage. In fact, he had had a second mortgage because he had to pay for all of his kids' private education. And not just private education. They had to have cars and everything else. He waited too long. And finally, he lost his house. He lost everything. And for the first time in his life, he found that he literally had nothing that he could rely upon. And he had, even though he personally never spent a lot, he had nothing that he could fall back on. But more importantly, he said, was that he had no one he could really talk to about it because it wasn't anything anyone wanted to talk about. He knew other senior citizens who were in similar situations. That's the kind of story of a person who had been an important part of America's development during our post-war economy, during the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, and 90s. And now, he's struggling, and he is, and his kids don't want him living with them, so he now faces the prospect of he worked on a farm for a while, because he's kept himself in shape, but a homeless shelter. Could you imagine that? Well, that's, you can't find this out unless you're out there talking with people. But as it turns out, one of the people that he introduced me to, because I'm always networking, I say, I'd like to talk with five or six people today. One of the people was a woman who came to a lecture I did in Tucson 35 years ago. We had a wonderful conversation. She remembers I was wearing a white suit and a black shirt, and she remembers that it was very funny, lots of laughing, doesn't remember what I said, but she felt good about it. And I said, that's the energy exchange. Everything in life is an exchange of energy. Now think of the energy you get each day. Who gives you your energy? What can you do with the energy you've been given? Does it disempower you or empower you? Do you feel better or worse? Do you look forward to it, or does it create remarkable moments? Or does it create anxiety moments, depressing moments? Because we have the power within the choices we make each day of stopping and asking ourselves, what do I want in this moment? Because I'm going to exchange whatever I'm doing now for my next choice. If I'm in a restaurant, if I'm in a store, if I'm in a conversation. Do I want to obsess with trivia? Well, that's not a good exchange. Why not talk about something relevant instead of trivia? And look at the media. It's all about trivia. When we overattach with anything or anyone, we become confused with our own authentic identity. We become disempowered by our illusions, including the illusion of what other people expect us to be for them or what we feel we have to be in order to be accepted by others. The methods and products of your success are not relevant. Who you are as a person is relevant. And yet we keep getting the wrong side of this issue. Next up. So, exchanging soft, healing music and just being present and mindful of the moment you're in is far more healing than the multi-intellectual casting out of bits and pieces, because every time you distract yourself, you break your focus. And when you break your focus, you break the energy that was allowing you to do something. Ginger reduces tumors in mice by 56%. This is from Georgia State University. Whole ginger extract was found to reduce prostate tumor size by 56%. In addition, it's a source of several bioactive phenolics, including gingerols, paradols, shogols, and gingerones, all of which are important. So get yourself some of that good ginger in your body each day. And then finally, 10 ways to spot a pervasive low-energy problem from adrenal fatigue. Most people at some point feel run down, fatigued, but sometimes it can be chronic, where they have to fight just to get through the day. Little do they know, they may have adrenal exhaustion or even hypothyroidism, which means they're not producing enough of the thyroid in order to allow the body to function properly. And then we start overstimulating the system. Not a good idea. So what can we do? Well, first understand that if you have a low sex drive or sexual energy is low, strong cravings for sugar or fats, if you're lightheaded when you stand up, if you have excessive PMS symptoms, if you have mood swings, if you have mental fogginess, if you constantly have muscular tension, and if you have constant colds, those are all signs of low energy and low mitochondria. So what can we do about it? Methylcobalamin, methylated B12, 1 milligram a day. Methylated folic acid, 1 milligram a day. 10 to 20,000 milligrams of buffered vitamin C throughout the day or up to bowel tolerance. And that's very important. Green tea, 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day. Coenzyme Q10, up to 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day. NADH, PPQ, 10 to 20 milligrams twice a day. And those are... And plus pantothenic acid, 500 milligrams, will really help your adrenal glands. One last thing, berries benefit the brain. This is from the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. There's very strong evidence that eating berries, all berries, blueberries, blackberries, strawberries, goji berries, are beneficial to the brain. There's an article that I read from a Dr. Hale and Miller who point out that helping people with Alzheimer's, the berries make an enormous difference. You bet they do. So the more berries you get into your system every day, the better it's going to be for you. Now, I suggest you have fresh organic berries, about a pint in the morning, or berry concentrate, about 3 ounces, like blueberry or cranberry concentrate, unsweetened, or frozen organic berries. Those are all great, and you should do that. But the best of all, the most concentrated, the most powerful, are your powders. Your berry powders, really powerful, because you're getting an enormous amount. If you only saw how many berries it takes in fresh form that are juiced and then the water removed, which is 98%, to get you a tablespoon of berry powder, you just couldn't imagine. The body could never eat that amount. So you want good, healthy brain. The study shows berries do it. We're going to go to our calls, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Please feel free to ask any questions on any issues that we address on this program. Happy to take on any of them. There is no censorship on this phone. There is no screening process. You know, give a call. Happy to hear from you in just a moment. Back with you in about 60 seconds. We also have Luann, who's in the studio in New York City, and we'll be speaking with Luann in a moment. But right now, let's say hello to Rosemary from Jersey City. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi, Gary Noel. Thanks for taking my call. I would like your input in this matter. I was once afflicted with the L-tryptophan issue. I had spoken to you five years ago, the last time, and you have always been excellent in helping me. I had been diagnosed at one time with lupus. It is not appearing on my blood test the last 2 years, but I do have Sjogren's syndrome. My issue here is, with the L-tryptophan, I had a paralysis. I always complain about a pulling and also a twisting in the limbs and also, but throughout the entire body, from head to toe. But the feet and the lower legs were the worst. In 07...
Hold on, you're going all over the place here now. Give me one question, please. Just one.
The immune system started noticing these areas that were affected. It gave me a blow at the sacrum. From then on, very weakened, rather sitting down, rather than having much energy. Very terrible situation.
Let me address it.
I was able to overcome that. But the immune system has been acting very viciously for the past 2 years. The drop feet, the between the sacrum, the upper part of the body from the sacrum.
Ma'am, if you just let me answer, I'll be happy to help you. Otherwise, we're going to spend the whole hour listening to your medical condition. You're talking about an autoimmune reaction. And so let's look at the larger picture and see what we can do. Because you're really co-joining the symptoms, and there are at least 5 or 6 different symptoms, all of which have to do with turning off inflammation, all of them. So things you could do, first and foremost, I would use an enzyme that helps to stimulate the production of prostaglandins, because they're good prostaglandins and they're bad prostaglandins. And the good prostaglandins, like that will come from bromelain, will help turn off the bad prostaglandins, which cause inflammation and which can lead to a swelling, can lead to pain in the joints, can lead to pain in the sacrum area. So we want to bathe the body about 5 times a day in bromelain. Then I would use chondroitin sulfate. Chondroitin, con, C-H-O-N, droitin, D-R-O-I-T-I-N. Anywhere from 500 to 1,000 milligrams. That's going to strengthen your joints, your ligaments, and your tendons, because that's also what you're referring to. Because a lot of athletes have this problem. They don't realize that their constant running or athleticism is diminishing their immune system, which makes their joints weakened. Bodybuilders do the same. So to have stronger ligaments, tendons, and joints, chondroitin sulfate each day, 1,000 milligrams. Then we want to supply the essential fatty acids. That will help not only anti-inflammatory prostaglandins, but it'll also specifically help the pain that you're referring to with three of your conditions. That would be the essential fatty acids, the omega-3 in particular. Then I would use glucosamine sulfate. That also is strong for bones, tendons, ligaments, cartilage, and synovial. That's the joint fluid. And also N-acetylglucosamine, NAG, generally 500 to 1,000 milligrams. Then MSM, 500 to 1,000 milligrams 3 times a day. That's also a sulfur compound that turns off inflammation and helps repair joint tissue. And then SAMe, 400 milligrams a day. Sea cucumber, silica, superoxide dismutase you can get from fresh wheatgrass juice, and trimethylglycine. I go high on trimethylglycine, generally 500 to 1,000 milligrams. That reduces homocysteine levels, because what it sounds like also is that you should check your homocysteine levels. And then boron, 3 milligrams with each meal. And then 125 milligrams of dimethylglycine 3 times a day. Sounds like a lot, but it isn't. And go towards boswellia, which is an Ayurvedic herb. That reduces inflammation and also reduces inflammation in the thyroid gland too. This is made from frankincense, the Boswellia serrata, and cat's claw as well. Hope that helps you. All the best to you, Rosemary. Lewis from Bridgeport, Connecticut. Hi, Lewis. You're on.
Bridgeport, Connecticut. How you doing?
Doing great. How can we help you today?
All right, I got a friend of mine, I take it you probably know him, Angelo Lobo. He's the one that's been giving me the master teachings of Gary Null. And I have an interesting problem. I kind of started going on, I changed my diet because I was tired of following up on everything the doctors are trying to give me. I'm diabetic, by the way, and I've been trying to get my blood sugar under control. Under a natural diet, I've really, really come down to almost, I'm almost a vegetarian just about. And I can get the sugars down to around 200. What can I do to further the effect? I've actually even thought about doing the gastric bypass, because I don't know if you've heard the studies that they have found that for some reason the stomach emits some kind of hormones that actually have the body go back.
I understand, but that's all nonsense. The bottom line is you're not exercising. If you don't exercise, you're not going to get your blood sugar down. Before breakfast, you should be about 100 maximum. The goal should be 75. Before lunch, dinner, and a snack, it should be about the same. And 2 hours after a meal, it should be less than 140. And before you go to bed at night, about 110. Now, that's my idea, not orthodox medicine's, because they're skewing the numbers too high. If you were to work out twice a day, if you were to take a walk, just power walk, in the morning, And then do another one in the evening, nonstop, because it's the stopping that breaks up the aerobic capacity. But when you do that, before you do it, take vitamin B12. That's very important. And also alpha-lipoic acid, chromium phenylate, and also garlic, L-carnitine, glutamine, taurine, quercetin, vanadium, B-complex. Those all support, along with manganese and coenzyme Q10, they support your blood sugar level. Then try in the morning bean pod tea, B-E-A-N-P-O-D. It's made up of kidney, white, navy, lime, and northern beans. It detoxifies the pancreas. And then bitter melon, which is very important. It's the herbal remedy. It's used in Ayurvedic medicine for controlling blood sugar. Then cedar berries. That will help nourish your pancreas. And then dandelion root protects the liver, which converts nutrients into glucose. And then fenugreek seeds has been shown to reduce cholesterol and blood sugar, which almost always go hand in hand. Then huckleberry helps promote insulin production, and juniper berries have been found to lower blood glucose levels. So dandelion root, uvaurce, bucha, bilberry, all good. And stick with the diet I'm sure that he has given you, which is a healthy diet. Also, if you want to watch the documentary and you're in Manhattan, drop by our office. People do every day at 83rd and Broadway from, let's say, noon until 6 o'clock, and they'll put on the diabetic documentary I did this year, and you can sit there and watch it. All the best to you. And let's say hello to Ed from New Jersey. Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. I have a question for you. I have a 13-year-old daughter who's been having problems with anxiety. And it's getting to be debilitating, where she doesn't want to go to school, and she's threatened suicide. And I think it's more of a, not a real threat of suicide, but it's just a defiant threat. Like, I don't want to go to counseling, I want to kill myself, I don't want to go to school, I want to kill myself. So we had to take her and have her put into a hospital just to evaluate her. They want to put her on Zoloft, and I'm afraid of that.
That would be the worst thing in the world she could be put on. Instead, I would suggest that you get her into the hands of Henry Grayson. Henry Grayson. As in Gray, G-R-A-Y-S-O-N. He is a humanistic PhD licensed psychologist, and he has the best method I have seen of tapping and exchanging energy, the energy of anxiety, the energy of depression, the energy of unrealistic fears for a state of calmness. That would be the approach. I would absolutely be against Zoloft because Zoloft is worthless and it will cause homicidal, suicidal, and rageful tendencies. Okay, that's what I would suggest. Dawn from Maryland. Dawn, your turn.
Hello, Gary. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a long-term listener, but I wanted you please to help us by briefly reiterating the 30-year-old myths that you have debunked, re-HIV, and just let us know up to now how many AIDS cases you've successfully treated, and what progress, if any, has the Worldwide Association of Scientists for the Reappraisal of AIDS made in educating the public in this area?
All right. I have worked with I've interviewed more than 3,000 persons with AIDS. I personally worked at the in my own private classes and in the Tri-State Healing Center with over 1,300 persons with AIDS-defining illnesses on an excessive protocol, meaning they had to be there 5 days a week, generally 4 hours a day, major commitment. 12 people did it, all 12 seroconverted to normal, completely normal. They were taken on to PBS Tony Brown's Journal. We had held a press conference, so their original physicians, their medical records be made available, so people from the media could come and see that something they have never done once, I was able to do 12 out of 12 times. Not a single member of the media came. That press conference where no one came, and the people telling their stories is up on YouTube. And as are Tony Brown's films up on YouTube, so you can see this for yourself. There are now 3,000 scientists and physicians, journalists, and activists who are members of Reappraisal of AIDS, and we're getting more and more people coming on board. It's just like Dr. Gupta, lo and behold, surprise, surprise, found sugar. Really? Sugar could be bad for you? I was writing about this in the 1970s. He's just now discovered it. That's the danger of having only health information come through official sources. That's like allowing only embedded journalists to tell us the truth of what happens in a theater of war. You're only going to get that which makes every American soldier seem heroic, our actions noble, and our mission to bring democracy, peace, and freedom. The reality, the majority, 90% of all the people killed are going to be innocent civilians. But that's collateral damage. As long as you say, we just blew the face off a baby, that's terrible. If you say there was some collateral damage and we're sorry about it, well, that's acceptable. So official messages are never true. Never. I've never seen an official message ever true. I believe nothing my government tells me or any of the official sources. I don't believe the official left or the official right. I don't believe any of the institutions. They've all betrayed us. All of them. That doesn't mean there's not a lot of good information. To the contrary, for the first time, the Internet has taken those who would have been obscure, those who would have been powerless, those whose voices would not have been heard, and given them a forum. That does not mean everything on the Internet is accurate. There's a lot of non-supported nonsense on the Internet. But at least now you can have people talking about what actually is going on in the war on AIDS. And I intend in the next 12 months to update my textbook on AIDS, AIDS of Second Opinion, and I have a brand new film that is almost done on AIDS, and just going after the pharmaceutical industries producing these drugs, the groups that are getting the money from them and being the shills out there to pimp for the pharmaceutical industries, that will come at you in the next year. Thanks for your call. Luann Panessi's in the studio. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I just wanted to kind of let everybody know that you mentioned this once before. We did a one-month health support group in January, middle of January to middle of February, and for our people with arthritis. And I got to tell you, I've been running health support groups and speaking at them for many years. And I've done year-long groups, a year and a half, 6 months, 3 months. And all through this time, we've had some very major improvements with people. What's remarkable about this group is that we didn't lose that many people from the beginning. People stuck with it, and the results were absolutely amazing. The most improvement we've ever seen in people with arthritis, they came in on with canes and walkers, couldn't get up the stairs, and the last day of the 4 weeks, they had full mobility, they were walking without assistive devices, they were upbeat, happy. Here's my question. We have never, ever seen this many people come to a point where they were ready to make a commitment. It was just a one-month group. I'm looking to you to see what your thoughts are about why now, why this group, why do you suppose, after all the years of doing health support groups, that this group came out with these types of results?
I can only guess, because as Clarence Darrow said, I do not pretend to know what many ignorant men are sure of. And I also would suggest Thomas Fuller, zeal without knowledge is fire without light. In our society, we're all filled with this zeal. We all want to go to the same place and look on in some spectacle to be moved or to be given something that superficially replaces the emptiness of the moment we're in. So almost everything in our life today is based upon a substitution for something to replace what we're unhappy with. That's why we watch these mindless, vulgar, demeaning television programs, or we'll listen to the pundits night after night, as if there's something real in what they're saying or something important to what they're saying. Who cares if Rick Sanitarium ends up saying something that is just as sophomoric and stupid as Mitt Romney. It's all stupid. These clowns do not deserve a forum. They have every right to run for office, but my goodness, people should understand you're giving these people, who are the weakest, dumbest creatures on earth, you're giving them the most powerful positions in the world, and they're going to abuse your rights without exception. This has all been shown. So that's where we're at today. Our institutions have betrayed us. We've been lied to. We were told to eat a diet of basic four food that served not our biochemical needs, but the needs of the special interest groups that were making hundreds of billions of dollars a year on this. We were told that if we needed any kind of relief, I gave at the beginning of the show, I gave natural hay fever relief. But no, we want to cover up the symptoms. So over-the-counter medications became get rid of your pain in your joint. I showed a woman how to get rid of the pain permanently in her joint by the changes, how to maintain normal blood sugar. But how can you maintain normal blood sugar when everything on television is telling you what to eat and all of it's bad? All of it. So we're told to eat genetically modified, fattening, trans fats, sugar, empty-caloried foods, carbonated beverages, highly acidic foods, and then when we get sick, to take a drug that is as worthless as the food that we were taking that created the condition. What part of this circle of degeneration should we not be participating in? So when I decide to put together the protocol for this, I ask a simple question. What is more important, the protocol or the belief system? And I came to an understanding that it's the belief system that is far and away more important than any protocol. I have seen so many people that will sit there and take copious notes of you take this vitamin, that nutrient, and this herb, and that food. But if they're not happy, they're not going to be healthy. You cannot be healthy if you're not happy. It's not possible. Every day, between 20 and 30 million Americans take a medication that is damaging to their system. Another 50 million Americans either drink or smoke or take drugs because it helps them cope with the life that they are not living, the authentic life they're not living. So it allows them to get through another day with whatever stressors that they feel. So what is the good of giving someone who is on marijuana and trying to get off a high-level B6 or give them a methyl donor for the brain when they have not exchanged the excuses they've used? I don't believe there is such thing as drug addiction. Oh, yes, drugs can impact our brain. They can impact our body. I believe it is a fear addiction. That's what we're afraid of. I believe that's the worst addiction there is, because the moment you're afraid of something, it has power over you. And then you hide from your fear, and where you hide becomes your drug of choice, whether it's cynicism or whether it is excessive religious ritual, whatever is allowing you to escape. That becomes your addictive behavior. And distinguish the difference between addictive behavior, which most people have. They go through the same motions every day. It's a groundhog life. Almost everything we do every day is predictable. And it's all predicated upon what can I do to get through another day. Not with joy, not with reverence, not with happiness. But what can I get into this day that will allow me to feel less of the pain of knowing I'm not living a completely authentic life? Look at how few people show up for any demonstration, no matter how important the demonstration is to our well-being, personal well-being, our health, our society, our rights. You get a handful of people, even with Occupy movement. You have under 0.1% of just the students alone in America. So you can't say it's a youth movement, because it's not. You can't say it's a college movement, because it absolutely is not. In fact, 99%, now listen to this, the 99% are absolutely adamantly opposed to the 1% who are in the Occupy movement. So the 1% that are actually protesting, whether you agree or disagree with how they're doing it, what they're stating, or anything will come from it, I don't believe anything will, because I believe they're doing it in a very disorganized manner, but be that as it may, I certainly respect the fact they're willing and have the courage and to go out there and challenge some authority. At least it allows us to be aware that something is happening. But who's not out there? the 99%. Well, then how are they the 99% when they're choosing not to? It's a choice. Remember, everything in life is an exchange. When you choose not to go into a demonstration, you choose not to give up your genetically engineered hamburgers, hot dogs, french fries, pizzas, colas, Bank America, your credit cards, and listen to these television radio stations and read their newspapers, then what exactly is the relevance of 99 when you have 99% of the people that you're trying to be helping who are not helping you? Once again, if we ever chose to actually look deeper than our illusions, both the left and the right, who should be on tranquilizers at this point since they're completely bankrupt and philosophically, thank God Keith Oberman is one less megalomaniac, Bill O'Reilly of the right, who at least temporarily will have to, well, no, he's got plenty of money. He won't have to worry about his next meal. It was Somerset Maugham who said it's a danger to let the public behind the scenes. They are really easily disillusioned, and they are angry with you, for it was the illusion they loved. But it was also George Santayana who said every real object must cease to be what it seemed, and none could ever be what the whole soul desired. Arthur Kessler said nothing is more sad than the death of an illusion. So the entire success of the anti-arthritic protocol in 4 weeks, what we normally would have taken a year and a half, and indeed did take a year and a half with one anti-arthritic group about 10 years ago, without a whole lot of success. If you remember, every single one of those four lectures over those 4 weeks, we started off where I'd lecture about our belief systems. Passionate lectures about what you believe in. How do you know it's real? How do you know that what you're giving your energy and support to is honoring you? What part of you? Is it the conditioned self, the authentic self? That allowed people to understand the power they had yet to unleash, the power to resolve, to give up bad habits, and to incorporate healthier habits. If you don't have a foundational adjustment, if you don't have a transition in your belief system to empower yourself, and you cannot empower yourself till you see how much power everyone else has in your life, and how just your daily rituals are following an addictive pattern. Most Americans will foolishly and stupidly actually vote for one of these candidates. How dumb is that? Now, is there some inherent discrepancy? No, there's not anything inherent. It's choice. They don't have to think. You just become an extension of the ideologies, and by extension, the ideologues who think for you, talk for you, argue for you. So as long as you've got Sean Hannity or you've got Rachel Maddow, you don't have to think. You've got someone who's done it for you. Well, are they objective? No. Are they accurate? No. Do they show you how to liberate yourself and the country in the process? Never. Then why believe in them? Because it's easier to take the drug of illusion than it is to get real with your life. So in this 4 weeks, the whole theme was get free to be your authentic self. That was the foundation that made it easy then to give up the meats and the sugars and the harmful products and to replace them with healthy lifestyle. If you didn't do the foundational adjustment in belief system, everything else that comes after it, first time they're stressed, first time they're tired, first time that they start yearning for the crunchy, salty, soft, and sweet, they would have flipped right out on it. And look at the final meeting when the control group was the group that attended the meetings but did not make the changes. They said quietly, nothing had changed because they had not changed their belief system. It wasn't the diet, it's your belief system. Hope that answers your question. I'm Gary Nall. That ends our program for today. I thank you all for listening.